evidence is sufficient to induce a reasonable juror to believe beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant is guilty, a directed verdict should not be given. For the purpose of ruling on the motion, the trial court must assume that the evidence for the Commonwealth is true, but reserving to the jury questions as to the credibility and weight to the given and weight given to such testimony. It appears to me that the basis for the defendant's motion is that it was not foreseeable that a house fire would have started and her kids would have been killed. Ms. Bingham clearly states in her interview that she was aware of a terrible electrical problem in the house, so much so that they should not have been living there. So I think that is dispositive, and I think the defendant's motion should be denied.
All right. Anything else you all want to say other than
that? Yeah, that totally ignores the fact that there was no proof that she had that she foresaw the risk of a house fire that totally engulfed her house in 4 minutes and killing everybody inside. There's been no proof of that. Yes, the court should take all inferences from facts and evidence, but there's no evidence of that in this case, period, none. Awareness of an electrical problem, that was prompted by Detective Hamdy's question, can you think of any reason this house might have burned down? Well, I don't know, maybe electrical problems.
So much so that they should not have been living there.
Well, you know what? She wasn't making $1 million working at Farrell's.
Didn't say she was.
It was her grandma's house, too, not hers.
Well, I'm not going to get into an argument with you. Everybody's just trying to do their job here, but the reality of the situation is she told the police, in her own words, multiple times that there was a terrible electrical problem in the residence.
Well,
that might get you reckless homicide, failure to perceive the risk of a fire, but not conscious disregard of a risk of a fire, which is required, and there's no evidence of that.
Okay. I last night spent some time on this issue and read a lengthy article written by Professor Lawson in 1973 when the criminal code was adopted and how they were dealing with intervening causes and that type of thing, and how they brought those old common law concepts within the terms wantonly and recklessly. I also came upon a case you have cited, Robertson, which involves a policeman in Northern Kentucky chasing a defendant, and sadly the officer falls off the bridge and dies, and the court upholds the conviction of, in that case, and second degree, same charge here. Your argument is based on a substantial and unjustifiable risk that the result will occur or that the circumstance that the result will occur, and you focus on the fire. The statute references the result, which is death of children, in my view. A parent does have a duty, obviously, to take care of their children, especially when they have assumed that duty. There's a case, West versus Commonwealth, of 935 Southwest 2nd 315, 1996, similar to cases I'm sure that we all have been involved in, where a defendant is convicted of homicide after he failed to care for his sister, who lack of medical care, things like that. We have similar cases,
I've reviewed that
sadly
case.
Enough, often in our court system. So I think I am under the Benham standard and under this language in the Ray case, I do have to consider the evidence in the most favorable light for the Commonwealth and have to determine if it would be clearly unreasonable for a jury to find guilt. And Mr. Moore has put together an excellent motion, but I am going to find that the issue is the result. How about that came about is obviously we're all wondering how this fire started and how it could be. But I'm going to deny the motion, although it is very well done and no doubt goes to the heart of the issues, legal and factual, of this case. And we'll hear from the defense.
Judge, with all due respect,
yes, sir.
The Lawson article
is old.
It's old, and the Lofthouse case changed everything before the late 90s. And everything since.
Well, what he was saying was, what Lawson was explaining, why you no longer have defenses for intervening causes,
sure,
and things like that. It's encompassed into wantonly and recklessly.
But all of the cases since Lofthouse say the risk has to be a specific one that was previously identified by the defendant and ignored. And we have no evidence of that in this case.
Other than the electrical panel.
No, the risk is fire. And there was no damage to the electrical panel. The experts said, no, the electrical system did not cause this fire. They all said that.
But we don't leave our common sense at the door here. Obviously, a fire is a logical result of an electrical issue. She knows there's an electrical issue to the point that nobody is supposed to be living there. She knows that. She disregards it, leaves her kids, who cannot care for themselves at all, in there to burn.
The cases you cite that are drug-based, like where someone has given someone a drug and they died, and the defendant had prior used the same amount of drug and not experienced that, I think are a bit different, because this involves the parent-to-child duty. So that puts it into a different class of sorts.
But it's the same charge, Judge.
It is the same charge.
And there still needs to be a specific and identifiable risk that's ignored by the defendant, and you don't have that here.
Well, Robertson,
yeah,
and we could probably argue this point all day long,
sure,
because it is interesting.
How about the mom who gave her son, 13-year-old son, a handful of methadone?
Yeah, that's here, yeah.
Your Honor,
okay, that's a good point. Ms. Rohr's point is that would involve the parent-child. That's your counter to that. Ms. Obie Wiggins, I'll hear from you on that.
I just say, in all due respect, the court has made a decision. We need to move on and get this case tried.
Well, but I want to have, I do agree we need to get on and have this case tried, but I want, Mr. Moore has raised, this is not your run-of-the-mill directed verdict motion. This is not your run-of-the-mill case in terms of homicide. It is a homicide by omission as opposed to commission. And it is a bit more difficult. The Robertson case suggests the court could have instructions that are even beyond what the Commonwealth has submitted in this case. It says that we could submit instruction that says that the death of the deceased occurred in a manner that the defendant knew was rendered substantially more probable by her conduct, or that the death of the deceased occurred in a manner which the defendant should have known was rendered substantially more probable by her conduct, whether it wantonly or recklessly. That's under the causation statute that you cite. I don't see in Cooper or Sotulo's revision utilizing that language, which I thought was very much pro-Commonwealth.
So did Justice Keller, if you read her dissent.
Right, and so I don't plan on using that instruction. I'm going to use the general instructions from... My plan is to use the General Cooper and Sotulo instructions, but I think if I use that language, is the death of the child, children, did they occur in a manner which the defendant should have known was rendered substantially more probable by his conduct, a 3-year-old and a baby left alone, I think a jury could find that. Whether they should or not is... You all going to argue some more, okay? So I am going to deny, but I will compliment that this is an excellent motion. And, it's their record, and smarter heads than me could feel differently. But I'll deny at this time, and we'll hear from the defendant's case. Do you all need to use restroom or anything before you begin or take a moment?
I don't.
Okay. All right, let's bring the jury back in. The court has denied the motion for a directed verdict. I'll be... It's very well done.